Chapter 19. 15 May 1937. Hugo nosed his old Buick into the drive of Oak Ridge. He'd grown attached to the car over the many years he'd owned it. He bought new cars to be chauffeured round in. If he was driving himself, he preferred to use the Buick. By the time he was on the steps, the front door was opening. It pleased him that she'd been waiting for his arrival. "Hello, Hannah." He followed her through the large square hall to a small sitting room at the back. Her figure was still girlish in a blue dress that was slender to mid-thigh and then rippled and swirled about her legs in the latest style. She lit a fire because the evening was cool and overcast. It was little more than a comforting glow in the grate. He studied her now as she busied herself getting him some whiskey. He'd always found her high cheekbones and large straight nose attractive, and the passing years had left them unchanged. He could just see the first silver threads coming into her dark hair, but she wore it shorter and loose about her shoulders these days, and that made her seem young. "What is it you want to tell me?" He'd been pondering on that since she'd phoned. "Rather a confession, Hugo. Something Matt wanted to keep from you." Her dark eyes shot a nervous glance at him. "You don't have to tell me."
"I do, because I want you on my side."
Hugo said nothing. He couldn't tell her he'd be on her side no matter what she did, but he'd always champion her against the rest of the world. She was rushing on.
"We were trying to protect Dorothy's reputation."
"Waste of time," he grunted.
"She's blown it to smithereens now, but—"
Hannah's eyes wouldn't leave his. She was suddenly serious.
"She had a baby you don't know about when she was 17. We pretended to take her to Switzerland for her health."
He stiffened with surprise and tried to cast his mind back. He had thought.
"You were very tense when you got back."
Hannah was searching his face as though for signs of condemnation.
"It was a girl. I named her Elizabeth. Matt wouldn't let me keep her. I should have done more for the child than I did. She was brought up at Yarrow."
"What better place? Good country air. You have a friend there, haven't you?"
"Yes, but I couldn't ask her. I put too much responsibility on her anyway. Elizabeth was brought up by one of her farm workers. She ran away when she was 14 and about to start work."
"At 14?
"Yes. She came here to Birkenhead. She's with one of the family who brought her up. He's the office boy at Evans's, and he's letting it be known that she wants no contact with us."
"What do you want?"
"I'd like to offer her a home. I feel I must do something for her. Would Matt be too shocked if he was to find her here, do you think?"
"Why should he? No point in worrying about Dorothy's reputation now."
"But what about Eunice? She has very strict and straight ideas."
"Don't worry about Eunice. How old is this girl?"
17, just the age Dorothy was when—"
"She could help you look after the twins. They're her half-brothers, after all. Only right she should get to know them."
"That's what I thought."
"But if she doesn't want any contact, if she doesn't want to come, you can't force her."
"But I can't even talk to her. This Joey O'Malley is determined to hide her away from me."
Hugo knew what she wanted of him before he said,
"How do you think I can help?"
"Hugo, you know how to get anything you want. Couldn't you arrange for Joey O'Malley to be watched? A private detective would soon find out where he was living."
He wanted to do anything she asked. Her eyes were so eager, so full of concern.
"I could," he sighed heavily. "But you've said they know where you are. She could arrive on the doorstep any time she wanted to. Lift the phone, write a letter. If she doesn't, it's because she doesn't want to."
"She's still only 17.
"But she's survived without anybody's help since she was 14. She's got more guts than the average Mortimer to do that, and she's bound to find it easier as she gets older. I'm not sure it's wise to interfere now."
Hugo heard the tap on the door and saw the woman put her head round.
"I've got them off, Mrs. Mortimer. They both took a full feed. Thank you, Edna. You go for your evening off now. I'll listen for them." While Hannah refilled their glasses, she told him that Edna was leaving to get married, and she'd need Elizabeth's help. He caught at her wrist as she turned and made her face him.
"Hannah, my dear, I feel quite strongly that we shouldn't interfere in other people's lives. Everybody has the right to go their own way. Whenever I have intervened, it's proved a disaster. Matt, for instance, Greg and Dorothy, too. Can't you accept that help with the babies will have to come from somebody else?"
He could see the disappointment on her face. It pulled at his sympathies.
"I have something important to tell you, too." He stood and put his glass on the mantelpiece, feeling the warmth of the fire on his back. "Franklin told me Dorothy's departure was not as sudden as he first made out. He's known about Duncan Grieve for some weeks."
"Poor Franklin."
"Dorothy told him the twins were not his. That's why he allowed you to take them out of his house."
"That's why he feels differently about the little girls?"
"Yes. Franklin was in a terrible state when I saw him. He admitted things had been fraught between him and Dorothy throughout her pregnancy, and grew worse once the twins were born. 'I hate children,' she'd screamed at him, 'especially babies. They cry day and night. There's no quietening them. I'm sick to death of attending to them. This house is overflowing with children. I can't stand it.'" He believed it was her conscience that made her feel guilty. "Nobody need know," he tried to comfort. "They'll be brought up as though they're mine." But Dorothy was beside herself. There was no soothing her. "Just as well, since their real father doesn't want anything to do with them. You always wanted children, especially sons." Hugo sighed. Franklin said it came as a shock to find Dorothy had gone, although she'd threatened it. He'd told her he'd accept the twins as his, but of course he meant if she were to stay too. He didn't want to be landed with bringing up another man's children. "It seems they're in need of a permanent home, Hannah. That's why I think it's better if you have them."
"I've more to thank you for than I thought. I'm so pleased, Hugo. I'd hate to part from them now."
"Am I forgiven for not wanting to trace Elizabeth, for limiting your family to two?"
If Hannah had had a radiance about her that morning, she was vibrant now. She came closer and put her lips against his cheek. It was a kiss of gratitude, he knew, and not meant to inflame his feelings. His arms went round her as though of their own accord. He hugged her to him with an abandonment he hadn't intended. The feel of her, the scent of her in his nostrils, inflamed him further. Hannah was almost as tall as he was. Her dark eyes were level with his and filled with understanding. He put his lips against hers, tasting them gently at first. As his arms tightened round her, he knew Hannah would recognize this as a lover's kiss. She hid her face against his shoulder, but still she held him close.
"We're laying all our secrets bare tonight, Hannah," he whispered in her hair. "I've loved you for years. Did you know?"
She seemed to cling closer, but didn't lift her head.
"Are you shocked?"
"No." He could barely hear her whisper. "Sometimes I felt you did."
"We needn't mention this again if you don't want to. I'll understand. I didn't mean to tell you. Didn't mean to embarrass you."
When she raised her face to his again, her smile had a new brilliance. "Oh, Hugo," she gasped, "the last thing I am is embarrassed." Then her lips were pressing against his. He felt a surge of love for her. She was showing him she felt love for him, too. All he'd felt for her and kept in check over the years exploded. He hadn't meant to let it flare into raw passion so quickly. He blamed the whiskey for robbing him of his normal inhibitions. She took him upstairs to her bedroom. Matt had always stood between them, kept them apart. He felt Matt's presence here, but even that couldn't cool him. Hannah had a quick bath and dressed herself again. She was alive and tingling as she went down to the vast kitchen. In the arger, she checked the contents of the lone terracotta dish. Edna would already have eaten her share of the steak and mushroom casserole before going out. What remained was intended for Hannah's dinner. It was simmering nicely, not overcooked, and there would be plenty for Hugo, too. Excitement was coursing through her. She couldn't believe he had said he loved her. Her cheeks felt flushed. She scrubbed some more new potatoes, looked out the apple pie, and opened a bottle of Bordeaux. Tonight she had something to celebrate. Hugo came to sit at the end of her kitchen table, his hair still damp from his bath. "I've wasted so many years," he said, getting up again to help himself to a glass of wine. "I was so envious of what Matt had." Already he seemed thoroughly at ease with her, and now I feel doubly guilty. Matt hasn't much to thank me for. What am I to do about him?
Nothing. He doesn't want me, doesn't need me. You could say he's deserted me, though he spends his time with antiquities instead of another woman.
Meaning anything to fill a vacuum?
She laughed and shook her head. Hugo, we've been friends for a long time and shared a lot.
This isn't friendship.
She heard the break in his voice.
It's both, Hugo, friendship and love.
If you had been anyone other than my daughter-in-law, I'd have told you I loved you years ago. Would you have welcomed that?
Hannah smiled. For most of those years, you've been the most important person in my life. I thought I wanted more from you than you could give.
Never, my love.
I had the same problem. You're my father-in-law. I couldn't see beyond that. I've had very little apart from you. No children, effectively no husband. My friends estranged. I play tennis and chat to people at the club. I garden and have cups of coffee with the neighbours, but my life has been flat.
She looked at him through her lashes. Now I have a lover. All the same, guilt. I just had to tell you, Hannah. I couldn't bottle it up any longer.
I'm so glad you have. Glad I have the babies. She sighed with contentment. Things are coming out right for me at last.
What a fool I've been, he breathed.
Nick felt better as soon as he headed his car towards Birchill Farm. The hours he spent in the factory dragged. Those he spent on the farm flew. He'd been coming here for some time now. In the evenings after work, if they were busy, and almost every weekend. This year he'd arranged his holiday from Evans's to coincide with the hay harvest, and spent all his time at the farm. He was paid for the hours he worked, though he'd have willingly done it for nothing. Birchill was the complete antidote to Evans's, and helped him survive the hours he had to be there. Occasionally, like this evening, he was going especially to take Marion out. The Young Farmers' Club was holding a dance in the village hall, and she wanted to go. He'd been looking forward to it all day. He felt easy with Marion. His Austin 7 rocked from bump to pothole as he went down the lane to the farm yard. He thought of the Dodges as good friends. The supper dishes had not been cleared from the table when he arrived. The family were lingering over second cups of tea.
"Are Marion's upstairs changing?" her father greeted him. "Lorna, run up and tell her Nick's arrived. Sit yourself down, Nick, and have a cup of tea while you wait."
He got on well with Marion's mother, too. Jess Dodge was a large, capable woman in her late 40s who did a good deal of work at Birchill Farm. Marion had inherited her perennial good humour from her mother. From the beginning, Jess had referred to Nick as Marion's boyfriend. "Was it the cow that attracted your attention over the fence that day, or our Marion?" she'd teased him one night. With Marion's brown eyes looking at him expectantly, Nick knew it wasn't the moment to say that his first impression had been that she was a boy.
"Both," he said, trying to sound enthusiastic.
He started taking Marion to the cinema.
"And what would I do on Saturday nights if I didn't have Marion?"
He was fond of her. She had an attractive giggle that bubbled out all the time. She encouraged him to come to Birch Hill and suggested things they could do together. He'd liked that. It was nice to be wanted. At first he'd thought he could fall in love with Marion. He wanted a real girlfriend,
and eventually he wanted to get married. He tried very hard to warm up what he felt for her, but had come to the conclusion he couldn't. Love had to come from the heart, not the head. Her looks were not the sort that attracted him. Even the kindest would describe Marion as hefty. "She's been up there ages painting her face," her father said. Nick smiled. That was the last thing Marion did. Her looks owed little to artifice. She was a wholesome country girl through and through. There was something unusually ponderous about her father's manner, though. "I've been thinking," he said seriously. He could spin his wooden wheelchair round on a sixpence, and did so now to come down the table to where Nick sat. "Mother says I'd better spell it out, so that you know." "Know what?" Nick asked, expecting it to be some aspect of farm work he wanted to clarify. "We'd welcome you here full-time, you know."
"Living here, he means," Jess put in. They were both looking at him expectantly.
"We'd very much welcome you into the family, if you and Marion decided. You know what I mean."
Suddenly Nick's toes were curling up in an agony of embarrassment. He gulped at his tea.
"We'd all get on very well together. You know we like you. You'd have a free hand to run the place. Well, you and Marion." "Yes, but I'm not..."
Nick knew his face was scarlet, but he didn't know how to cope with this. "We've willed the place to Marion. We want you to know that. We've got a bit put by. We can leave to our Lorna."
"It's very kind of you to tell..."
Nick didn't know where to look, nor what to say.
"Eh, you're embarrassing the lad, Neville. Here we are, rushing him on faster than he wants to go."
"It's a bit tricky, talking of things like this, but we wanted you to know how things stood."
It needed to be said to clear the air.
Nick tried to pull himself together.
"Perhaps Marion has other ideas. She could do better than me."
"Nonsense," Jess said wholeheartedly. "You'd be good for her." That seemed to make it a whole lot worse.
"You know I can't sell the place," her father went on.
Nick knew it had been on the market for more than the year he'd been coming here.
"But it gives us a living of sorts. Not much money in farming, with the depression and that."
"It's a comfortable living," Nick said with a shiver. He was sure he could make more from it than the Dodges. He'd like to try pigs and perhaps turkeys at Christmas time. Of course Neville and Jess were still quite young. They'd be here for decades yet. But he thought he could get on with them. Little Lorna was a sweet kid. To spend all his time here instead of going into Evans's was very tempting.
"A family of girls. We can't manage without a man about the place. It's too much for Mother. It would be the best thing for us all."
Upstairs they heard a door close. Marion's father spun his chair round and shot away from Nick as though afraid of being caught doing something he shouldn't. Marion was coming down. She came into the doorway, tall and statuesque in her dance dress. Her bare shoulders seemed unfamiliar, rising above the blue taffeta. Handsome they certainly were, with the strength and grace of a young mare. She broke the heavy silence.
"I'm ready at last, Nick."
Everybody seemed awkward. He'd never felt like this with her before. He knew then he couldn't take up the offer. There was no fire in what he felt for Marion. He'd kissed her once or twice in the hope of kindling it, but it wasn't there. He wondered as he led her out to his car whether she knew just what her father had offered, whether it was her idea or that of her parents. He went cold again at the thought that Marion might have asked them to do it. He knew he must tell her quite clearly how he felt. She'd always treated him with honesty. He must do likewise. Perhaps she did hope, as he'd once hoped. It was only right to tell her she was wasting her time. His car was tiny, and they were both big, overfilling the small seats. He was conscious of his arm pressing into her as he changed gear. It was the first time he'd known her wear perfume. Outside the hall in the village, even before he'd switched off the engine, he could hear piano, saxophone and drums blasting out in straight tempo. If you were the only girl in the world. Marion hurried inside. She knew everybody. They were neighbours and friends who'd known her all her life. She introduced him to a lot of people. There was Carol, a girl she knew from school, showing off a new engagement ring and a husband-to-be. It made Nick cringe anew to see Marion take such an interest in the ring and their future plans. Another man asked, "Would your boyfriend mind if I asked you to dance?" "No," he made himself smile. "Marion doesn't see me as a permanent fixture. She'll welcome a change." She came back to flop on the chair next to his, and as soon as the trio started up again, she said, "Good, a barn dance. Come on, Nick," and was pulling him onto the floor that had been sprinkled with French chalk. He knew from her flushed and shiny cheeks that she was enjoying herself, and hints such as he'd made would just not do. He didn't enjoy the dance, couldn't take his mind off what he must say. There seemed no way of doing it that didn't deliver hurt, and the last thing he wanted was to hurt her. On the way home, as they bounced together down the lane to the farm, he knew he couldn't put it off any longer. "Marion," he said, switching off the engine, "you've been a good friend to me. I'm just sorry we couldn't make it more. I'd have liked us to be in the same position as Carol and John." She was opening her mouth, but he daren't give her a chance to speak until he'd spelled it out. It would be more embarrassing for both of them if she said she loved him. "Once I hoped you'd fall in love with me, but you're right to hang on, Marion, love. You can find a much better husband than I'll ever make. The men were lining up for you in there." He kissed her, a peck on her cheek such as a fond aunt might give. Her eyes looked at him levelly through the near dark. She was giving nothing away, but he thought he'd done what was necessary. "Yes, well, so you think Mr. Wright will soon be along for me, and Miss Wright for you?" Her giggle bubbled out as usual. "Hope they hurry up." She got out of the car. "Good night, Nick. Thanks for taking me. See you tomorrow." His forehead was damp with sweat. He wanted to get away as quickly as he could after that, but his car wouldn't start. The kitchen door slammed behind Marion, and he was left in the yard. He cranked and cranked on the starting handle until the perspiration was running down his back. He wished he could love her. It would have solved so much. Marion deserved a husband who loved her. At last the engine fired, and he could go. Nick was a bit apprehensive about going to Birch Hill the next morning, but he had to, because he knew they were relying on his help. Apart from the odd conspiratorial glance in his direction, nothing had changed. He was glad, and he continued to go. Another year went by, and the older Dodges seemed to have accepted that he and Marion were never going to marry. He was no wiser now as to whether she had hoped for it. She'd never given him any sign, just continued in her normal, friendly, giggling manner. Last month the Dodges had heard of a prospective buyer, and were trying not to be too hopeful in case nothing came of it. Two representatives had visited the farm and said they were very interested, having recently bought other land in the neighbourhood. Nick knew Neville was quite excited. "Not a private buyer. Birch Hall will no longer be a family farm. It's a company called Capital Farms. They treat farming as a commercial enterprise, have land all over the place, and they're buying more. Employ a lot of people." Before this had come up, Nick had persuaded Neville to let him try sowing wheat in the autumn instead of the spring. And since, if sold, the farm would be taken over with the standing crops, he'd taken a day off from Evans's to prepare the land for it. He was following the pair of heavy horses up the field, concentrating on keeping the furrows straight, when he saw the big car come bumping down the lane and into the yard. Two men got out and went into the house, and a little later came out with Jess and Marion, and changed into Wellington boots. He could see the men taking notes on clipboards as they toured the fields and outbuildings. They didn't look like farmers. When he saw them coming across to speak to him, he reined the horses in. They introduced themselves as representatives of a large corporate-owned farm. One of them, Edmund Stanton, gave him a card. "Mr. and Mrs. Dodge have accepted our offer. We're going to buy Birch Hill," he said. He seemed only a few years older than Nick was, and carried himself with the confidence of a man who was achieving his ambitions. "They tell us you're a good all-round worker. We'll be glad to keep you on for weekend work. Most of our workers like to be off then. We've set capital farms up so men can work average hours if they want that. We use casual and part-time labour for busy periods and weekends. Would you be interested?
Yes, Nick said. Very interested.
Of course, you won't necessarily spend all your time at Birch Hill. You'll move round quite a bit. It might be at some other farm nearby. Would that be a problem?
No, not at all.
We're taking on full-time staff, too. If you want to change to that, we'd be pleased to consider you. That way you could get promotion, manage a group of farms.
Thank you.
Nick shook his hand and couldn't help but notice that he turned very quickly to Marion when she said something. The following week, Neville Dodge said, "It's all going through without problems." Nick was pleased for them.
"What's going to happen to you?"
"Got to leave the house. They want it for their own staff. Going to do it up, I believe. But we'll get another. No problem there."
"I hope we don't lose touch,"
Marion's mother said.
"Course we won't," said Nick.